to the Monday, December 3rd edition of the Clemson Dubcast. Hope everybody is dried out, thawed out from Saturday in Charlotte. Boy, what a amazing turnout by Clemson fans. Ton of fans still showed up despite all the elements. Just very, very impressive. Nothing really going on this week with football, almost like an open date. Coaches are focusing heavily on recruiting for the early signing period. Of course, Sunday, a day of really no suspense. The matchup with Notre Dame and the playoff inclusion was really met with more of a golf clap than anything else in the football offices. So the Tigers are headed to Jerry World for the semifinal matchup with the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Plenty of coverage of that at TigerIllustrated.com. Also, Paul Strelo's much anticipated Monday morning recruiting insider is up as we speak. Going to be a really interesting few weeks leading up to National Signing Day. So if you already are not a subscriber to TigerIllustrated.com, never a better time than right now. If you sign up, you get $99 in free gear to put under the Christmas tree. Really good deal there. Title sponsor of the Clemson Dubcast, Parham Smith and Archenhold Law Firm in Greenville. Very happy to have them aboard. Couldn't do it without them. Blake Smith and Brooke Archenhold, both Clemson grads, both huge fans. Forte of their firm is medical negligence. They represent patients and their family members in medical negligence actions. They also handle all sorts of other complex personal injury litigation. I can vouch for them. About 10 years ago, a family member had a pretty serious medical situation with one of the local hospitals. Went to Blake Smith, and he very quickly and authoritatively gave us some great advice, and we were very thankful for that. Parham Smith and Archenhold offers free consultations. Give them a call, 864-990-4581 or parhamlaw.com. Also sponsoring the Dubcast is the Abernathy Boutique Hotel. A short Trevor Lawrence throw from Death Valley. Man, it is a favorite for the ESPN folks who come into town, who stay there various times of the year. Also, man, it is booked up and packed to the gills for home football weekends. It is really caught on for people who want to come in and stay. Also, Taps Bar and Cafe, a really cool spot to go hang out during the week. If you want to grab a drink with some friends, some of you professors out there who want to wind down after work, laid-back alternative to some of the more boisterous college bars in downtown Clemson. So go check them out if you already haven't. Got some really good beers on tap, including my favorite, the Hugie Street IPA. So check them out online at theabernathy.com. Okay, chances are, if you've heard the name Brett Jensen, you have probably been ticked off by Brett Jensen. Brett spent a long time covering the area college football and basketball programs for the Anderson Independent Mail. Then he covered Clemson for quite a while. And then he was a regular guest on the old Pac-Man show on WFNZ. He has recently started working at a radio station in Charlotte, not doing sports, but doing news, including covering hurricanes and such. And so we had some time to kill on Saturday in Charlotte before the ACC championship. So we figured it'd be a great opportunity to sit down with Brett and catch up with him on what he's doing, how he's doing his job, how it's different from covering sports, and also, of course, reminiscing about a lot of the cool and funny stories from the Clemson beat, from his time in the area, covering Tommy Bowden and Oliver Purnell and others, and even Dabo Swinney when he was a receivers coach. And I'll say this, you know, Brett never pulled any punches and still doesn't. And if you're going to have a choice between a reporter who constantly sunshine pumps all the time and one who might be too hard on the people he covers, I would choose the latter any day of the week, but that's just my opinion. Okay, here we go. Fun conversation. Hope you enjoy. Okay, Brett Jensen, one-time colleague, long-time friend. How you doing, man?
Pretty good. That noise you just heard is all your subscribers turning it off.
All right, so this is, I'm planning on this being published on Monday morning, and we are sitting here on a miserable Saturday afternoon in Charlotte, and you have a new, well, I guess new, relatively new. When did you start it?
Three months ago.
Okay, 3 months ago. You're a news reporter for the radio station WBT, News Talk Radio in Charlotte.
Correct. Yep, it's home of the Carolina Panthers, home of the Tar Heels, but it's one of the largest wattage stations in America. It goes back to, they were getting ready to have their 100-year anniversary here. It's one of the first radio stations in America. And, yeah, 50,000 watts, its signal or its slogan is from Canada to Cuba, because at night you can hear it clear as a bell all the way from Halifax all the way to Havana. Up and down the eastern seaboard. And at night, you can get calls from Chicago, Miami, New Orleans. So it's pretty cool. I like to call it Sirius XM before Sirius XM. Back in the day, you know, before there was Sirius XM, I remember, like, we would be driving back, say, from Clemson playing at NC State, and we've got a four-hour drive ahead of us from Raleigh back to Anderson or Clemson, and it'd be late at night, and I would pick up stations, and I'd turn it on to AM, and I'd try to listen to sports stations or a game being played, and you'd pick up stations out of Chicago or New York, New Orleans, and it's the same thing with this one. No matter where you are east of the Mississippi, you can pick up the station at night. But, yeah, it's completely different. I'm doing hard news with a little bit of sports, but mostly hard news, and it's something completely different and enjoyable, because you know this better than anybody. You can look at a schedule in April and go, all right, well, on November 24th, I'm going to be at this place watching Clemson play whoever. Like, you already know your schedule. I wake up every day and having no clue what's going to happen in the world of news.
Just this morning, there was a shooting.
There was a shootout with a couple of cops with a suspect, and the suspect was shooting from his home at police officers this morning at 8:30, and the officers wound up shooting the guy a couple times. We haven't heard yet whether or not he's dead yet, but at the time they took him to the hospital, he was still living and had been shot twice. So, I mean, every day it's something different.
Okay, so is there somebody listening to a scanner? Are you doing that? Like, how are you alerted to something happening?
I have alerts set up on my phone with the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department. Like, so when they send out tweets or emails, I automatically get alerts, and my phone goes off and says, "Oh, you've got an email from them." You got, because the really cool thing about this is that you do get. Well, during the weekdays, we have scanners. Yes, we've got all the scanners. But on the weekends, like today, me being off, I got an email. It came through at 8:25 in the morning saying there's the police are investigating, Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department is investigating a shooting with officers. And so I immediately went to the CMPD, Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department's Twitter feed, and they said where it was at. And I was like, okay. So then you start making calls, and then you say, do I need to go out there? Do I not need to go out there? What's going on? And so, yeah, I mean, it's just like it's whenever there's something major, because there's such a major media market, the local emergency officials, they'll send out emails and let you know, because they'll say, all right, instead of everyone trying to call us and all these different media outlets trying to call us, whether it's five different radio stations and six different TV stations and internet sites or whatever, we just send out an email immediately to inform people of what's going on. So you don't have to call us. We'll call you.
So is it your decision on whether to go chase something?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. During the weekdays, I'll make the decision if I think it's something that I think it's worthy or newsworthy. Sometimes there have been one or two times that the boss has come in and said, Brett, do you think we should be covering that? And I usually take that as a sign he wants me to cover that.
You need to cover that.
So, but yeah, for the most part, I'll discuss it with some newsroom guys and say, all right, what do you think? Should we be doing with this? Should we be covering this? And so that's just the way we, you know, most times I'll know whether or not it needs to be covered. But there's, you know, 10% of the time I'll discuss it with other people in the newsroom. And, you know, basically being the lead hard news guy, hard news reporter, you know, I make that call, but it's but there are times where I'm not sure whether or not we should go someplace, and that's, you know, and if they think, yeah, we should go, then I go.
Okay, you go to cover a story. You're out on location.
Mm-hmm.
You talk to people and all that. You get your information.
Mm-hmm.
Do you come back to the station and then record, or you call, phone?
Well, so we have two different things that we can do. And it's really cool, and I just learned about one of them 2 weeks ago. There's an app that you can actually buy. And there's an app that you can actually buy. And you, and it lets you talk. It lets you dial in to all the big servers at the radio station, assume, you know, if you know the numbers and digits and all that. And it allows you to be on air. Even though you're on your phone 20 miles away, it allows you to sound like you're sitting next to the person in studio talking on a microphone.
Wow.
It's not a phone recording, like, you know, like when you hear your favorite sports talk shows, you know, Al from Anderson calling in at WCCP. I mean, it's, you know, it sounds like you're in studio, just like, you know, you and I are talking right now. And I just learned about that a couple days ago. But, so I can do live reports on something, which I've done quite a few of. Like when I had to go to my second day on the job, they sent me to Wilmington for the hurricane. And I was out in the hurricane for five days. Hurricane Florence. I was out there for 5 days. You do a lot of live reports, but I also will do reports. I'll sit in my car and do a report, and the reports are anywhere from 30 to 45 seconds, and I have the audio because I have my microphone that I've recorded things. I can splice things on my iPhone.
Like an interview with a police chief or something.
Exactly. Perfect example. Exactly. And I can splice it up, say, okay, I want to use this 10-second soundbite. I want to use this 5-second soundbite, whatever, wrapped around me explaining what's going on. And then I just email it into the station, and then they put it on the air because we do our newscasts or just quick commercials, like when we get the weather and news and traffic, every 15 minutes. And so it might be, you know, reporting live from West Charlotte, Brett Jensen's on the scene, and then you hear my 30-second newscast, you know. But like I said, if it's something major, I will break in live to all the local shows and do live reports that could last, you know, 8 minutes of what's going on there. So it's completely different from anything that I've ever been used to. As I told someone, I went from writing about or, you know, doing news from Clemson, South Carolina, Duke, North Carolina to Republicans, Democrats. I mean, it's the same thing. It's just two groups that absolutely hate each other because I've done election stuff. So, yeah, it's kind of cool. Like I had to do when Trump came to town for a rally 3 days before Election Day, I had to cover it. And then 2 days ago, Bill Clinton was in town. Part of his book with James Patterson, his book tour with James Patterson, and I had to go cover that. So I've never spoken to any presidents, and in 3 weeks I spoke to two presidents. It's kind of cool.
And you're also, you fill in sometimes on a talk radio show?
Yes, because this station, it's a news station, but it's a talk news station. And if someone's out, I'll fill in and do the entire show, but our sister station is the sports station where I used to have a show for almost 4 years. And if someone's out there, I'll fill in on there as well because, you know, I'm able to do crossover and do both, and we're owned by the same company. So they'll have, like, as a matter of fact, last week, the day before Thanksgiving, the morning show guy got sick in the middle of his show and had to go home. So they actually walked into the newsroom and said, Brett, can you jump in?
Right away.
And so I had 2 hours to talk, and I'm like, okay, let's go. And so it was, you know, like, and it's easy, you know, I still follow sports left and right. I mean, so it's easy to sit here and talk about the Panthers or Clemson or whatever, what's going on with the Hornets. So, yeah, I mean, you can just jump in because I've always tried to treat my show. When you used to come on my show a lot to give me all the Clemson stuff because you were always my Clemson guy, I always tried to treat it as if you and I were sitting at a bar just talking. And that's how I try to treat it, even just walking in with no preparation whatsoever. Hey, you're on air live for 2 hours in Charlotte doing sports radio with no preparation.
But one of your stipulations is you're not going to talk politics.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like I said, Trump coming to town, you know, Bill Clinton coming to town, that's a news event. Talking about policy and whether or not this is that, because I mean, there's everyone else talks politics. Everyone wants to talk politics. It's pretty much like when I worked at CU Tigers, I said, I'm not doing recruiting. Mm-hmm. It's the exact same thing. Like, there are people who want to do recruiting, like your guy, Paul Strelo, who we both know extremely well. He loves to do recruiting, and he's very good at it. And there are people who love to do politics and are very good at it. I just don't want any part of it. And I didn't want any part of recruiting, and I didn't want any part of politics.
You have gotten to know Tommy Bowden pretty well.
Yeah.
And that's really fascinating because you used to grill that dude when he was the coach at Clemson. And so did I, admittedly.
Yeah, yeah.
And he... The Raycom offices are directly across the street from the WBT offices, and that's where he goes. He flies into Charlotte every Friday night, and then he goes, like, during the season, and then he does the ACC studio show each Saturday. Tell me about how you guys have gotten to know each other better.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. On Facebook, I always try to stay away from political stuff, but when I would do something political, it was always... not Republican Democrat. It was always, a shot at the media for what I thought was being unfair or not being unbiased. And one day, Tommy, clear of the blue, I had not spoken to Tommy, God, Larry, in years. And one day, a couple years ago, he sent me a private message on Facebook, and he said, "I love reading your posts. I always wanted to talk religion and politics, and Tim Bray wouldn't let me." That's all it said. That's all it said.
No way.
I swear to you. I could show you the message.
If he would have taught religion and politics, he wouldn't have lasted 9 years. He would have been gone long before that.
Right. And so we started talking back and forth, and next thing you know, you know, we've developed this friendship through Facebook where we message back and forth. And like when I was down in Wellington for Hurricane Florence, two, 3 months ago, you know, he sent me some messages, hey, be safe out there, I'm praying for you, stuff like that. And then, you know, 2 weeks later when Hurricane Michael was getting ready to like level right next door to where he lives, you know, it was coming ashore where he lives down there in the panhandle of Florida, I said, hey, make sure you and your family are safe. I'm thinking about you. Which is the funniest thing. Like, me and Tommy Bowden, of all people, it might as well be Bart Wright and Tommy Bowden. But it was like me and Tommy Bowden. And, you know, the funny thing is, like, I remember, I'll never forget, after Clemson went to Virginia Tech, and I think it was a Thursday night, you, me, and Mark Schlabaugh rode to Virginia Tech together and back. And that was the game where Will Proctor had one of the worst performances I'd ever seen.
Yeah, it was 06.
Yeah, one of the worst performances I'd ever seen from a Division I quarterback. Like, he was trying to throw a screen pass and actually threw it in the stands one time. And so Colin Harper was on the bench. And I remember, like, the whole thing that year, especially from that game going forward, is, are you going to put in Colin Harper? Because you remember, Colin Harper the next year came in and just lit it up and was all ACC. Well, I'll never forget, we're sitting there at the press conference, and he's like, well, you know, the following day, you know, we're all sitting there doing our usual Tuesday stuff. And he's like, well, you know, no, you know, we're still going to go with Will Proctor. You know, we started looking at the film, and so-and-so had a drop, so-and-so had a drop, so-and-so had a drop. You know, that's like five or six drops right there. That makes his percentage a lot better. It doesn't make it look as bad. And I remember going, well, did you count the dropped interceptions?
Oh, my God.
And Tommy, this was in front of the entire press conference. And Tommy looked at him, and he just smiled, and he just said, no, we didn't do that.
Oh, I remember late that year when, you know, Tim Bray is feeding him these offensive statistics. And he said, why would I bench Will Proctor? We've been setting records. Well, the ultimate Tommy Bowden, Brett Jensen interaction was during a Tuesday press conference.
Oh, is this what I think it's going to be? We haven't discussed this, but I think I know what it is.
Just FYI to the listeners, every Tuesday press conference, since I can remember.
Oh, here it comes.
Has been catered by Chick-fil-A. Herb Tyler of Chick-fil-A. And Jensen over here, during the press conference, is eating. He's in mid-bite or mid-chew, whatever you want to call
mid-chew.
It.
Yeah, mid-chew, yeah.
When I guess you heard an answer that you wanted to follow up on, and you followed up with your mouth full. And Tommy says, what? I can't understand you. Are you eating? You got your mouth full. But can you repeat that? And then afterward, we're giving you all kind of grief. And this anecdote lives on. I mean, it comes up probably at least once a year. And you said, what do you want me to do? My bread shifted. I didn't know my bread was going to shift.
It was, you know, it was in the side of my cheek, and I tried to speak, and next thing I know, I opened my mouth to say something, and instead of being in the side of my cheek like a wad of tobacco, it went right in the middle of the mouth, and it sounded like I had a sock in my mouth, and it was awful. But yeah, but you know what's funny, though? Because, you know, I'd gotten out of media for 2 years. I was completely out of it and had not done anything media-wise other than a little bit of freelancing here or there because I had just gotten tired of the hatred among fans. And like,
you're talking about recently, before this current?
Yeah, you know, they had just this radio station here. It reached out to me and said, would you be interested in coming back into media after having been out for 2 years? And, you know, just because the fans had just gotten so out of control, and it's just gotten worse with Twitter. I mean, people who say the word coots or people who say the word...
taters.
Taters, thank you. That's the other word I was thinking of. Taters and coots. Like, seriously, they have the IQ of a Buick. I mean, it's just awful. And so, and it just, you know, whether you're getting death threats or whatever on Twitter, and I remember it all starting, like, it got really bad. The first time it really got bad when I was covering Clemson for CU Tigers was, I'll never forget this, you and I were at a spring practice, and it was Willie Korn's first spring practice as a freshman. And you and I were watching that, and you know, and he had been an ESPN top 11 quarterback and all that stuff, and was a local kid, and out of Burns, I believe Burns, right?
Yep.
And I remember you and I were sitting there watching this, and I'll never forget this. We were watching him throw after like 10 throws, and you looked at me and you went, "Oh dear." I'll never forget that. And I went, "Yeah. He can't throw. He's got no arm strength, and he's not accurate." And it had nothing to do with injuries or age. You could tell immediately. And I wrote something to that effect. Like, you know, he's got a long way to go that day after we were doing a wrap-up on spring practice. And just the hatred from CU Tigers that just spilled towards me, and people begging Roy Philpott to fire me and all that. And I was like, do you want reality and truth? Or do you want me to blow sunshine up your rear end and tell you, hey, he's going to be great and he's going to set all kinds of Clemson records? And I remember that being the very first time going, what in the hell's going on here? Just because Willie Korn was supposed to be the savior. It was like the biggest quarterback recruit they had had in a long, long time. And I'll never forget, you and I were sitting in that press box, that freshman spring practice, and we went, oh, God.
Well, I want to say, and I could be totally wrong here because I don't cover recruiting, but I want to say Rivals downgraded him from a 5-star to a 4-star, something like that. And, oh, man, people flipped out over that. But the thing, and we were talking about this a couple days ago, the thing now is, you know, a premium website message board is mostly a closed sort of group, you know, society, I guess, with like-minded people. So, yeah, you're going to get some people who are mad at you when you say that the second coming quarterback is overrated. But now on Twitter and Facebook and all that, it's a constant, people are just at each other's throats. And I mean, it's to the point, man, people just want to be mad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've talked about that on my podcast before. Like, just actually a couple of days ago, I was actually giving some credit to South Carolina and their first year offensive coordinator, Brian McClendon, for going and doing basically what Syracuse did in 2017, when they not only pushed the tempo, but they would rush to the line and then look to the sideline, but fake looking to the sideline. And then once Clemson looked over to their sideline to get their audible, you snap the ball, and then they're not set. They're basically scrambling from that point. And, you know, there were some – actually only one person, I guess, on Twitter, so I probably shouldn't even mention it. It's just one, you know, one person, but says, oh, yeah, I'm sure that, you know, Clemson's basically thought that it was a backhanded compliment, you know. And I my response was some people are so eager to get triggered that they do so even when somebody pays their team a compliment. I mean, and you don't see it. It's not like you walk into a restaurant or any other gathering area when people have to talk to each other face to face.
That's right.
And see people yelling and screaming at each other and calling everybody names. It's only this power that people get behind a keyboard of not having to face that person they're confronting.
Well, and you remember when we were covering Clemson in the early 2000s, or when you moved to covering Clemson when you left Augusta, or Charleston, I should say, you know, and it was message boards were considered the evil of the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, they were, everyone, oh, the message boards. And, you know, and you had, like you talk about, like a lot of anonymity, whether it was Coop Carl from Central. And it was, you know, whatever, Triple C from, and it was just like, oh, God, the message boards. Here we go with the message boards. And the flames, that was the term, flame.
Yeah.
It was flaming.
Chat rooms.
That's it. But now, those are considered peaceful places for the most part.
Right.
It's Twitter. Mm-hmm. And it just got to the point where I had left, you know, I had been in sports. Had been a reporter, had been in sports for 25 years. You know, I'd been with ESPN. My first job out of college was at the Charlotte Observer for 4 years. You know, I was here living in Charlotte as the Hornets and Panthers beat writer for FoxSports.com. I was doing the Charlotte Hornets pregame show on Fox Sports South on television. And it just got, I was like, you know what? I'm sick of it. I just Kemba has a bad game, and you write something about Kemba, or Cam Newton, you know, who completed, I think, only 58% of his passes last year, ranked 27th in 29th in completion percentage, and you write something about that, and people just lose their minds, and it's like you're taking a personal shot at their mother, and I never understood that. It just got to be way too serious, and it became too much like politics, where there was no compromise. It was just either you're for us or you're against us.
That's right.
And I just, like, I didn't want to do this. And that's part of the things that I do like about being news. Because at the end of the day, facts are facts. South Carolina lost to Clemson by 21 points. That's a fact. Facts aren't positive. Facts aren't negative. It's a positive if you're a Clemson fan. It's a negative if you're a South Carolina fan. And it's completely irrelevant if you're a Michigan fan. Facts aren't positive and facts aren't negative. Facts are just facts. And that's the one thing I do like about being in the world of news, whether it's shootings or whatever it is, something major, whether it's hurricanes. It's just, I don't have anyone screaming at me, telling me to crawl in a hole and die because I said something about Roy Williams.
Okay, Roy Williams. You used to get death threats when you would criticize him?
I actually got a couple of death threats, email and on Twitter, because I said, I think my direct quote was, do you remember when Roy Williams, North Carolina was playing Presbyterian in basketball, and it was early in the season, and North Carolina was up 20-30 points in the second half, and Deion Thompson was at the free throw line, and a Presbyterian fan yelled, "Miss it, Deion," and he had the fan removed from the stadium.
That was awful.
And I said, I don't understand why the media isn't just ripping him sideways. I said, he should be crucified. And now, obviously, I didn't mean in the literal sense, like, right, Jesus Christ. But, I mean, I said, and my exact quote was, he should be crucified for what he did. I got death threats via Twitter. I got threats via email. I mean, I was like, are you serious? Because he had a fan who had the seats legally, And you kicked him out?
Who wasn't being vulgar.
Who wasn't being all he said was, miss it, Deion. That was his. That was the fans' direct quote. And you're winning by 20 late in the second half. And I remember saying that on radio, Roy Williams should be crucified. And it was as if I just, seriously, as if I had just burned somebody's house down. And I went, what in the world is going on here? And then I remember like a couple days later, I said something about Krzyzewski, who I deemed to be one of the most hypocritical people in the world of sports. And it was almost the exact same thing. I didn't get the actual death threats, but it was like people, I know where you live and da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, are you serious? So that's when I just decided, I started thinking, I was like, why am I doing this? And you know, and you deal with it a lot because, you know, you're in a very tough situation. You deal with a college from when you and I started covering it. They were always okay, you know, top 25 here or there. A good year was top 10, maybe. A bad year was 7-5. You know, and we were going to the Music City Bowl to play Kentucky, for God's sakes. You know, that was a bad year. But you've gone from rabid fans who always thought that they should win a national championship every year because of what happened in 1981, or 83, I guess
81.
It is. 81, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Georgia was 83.
Georgia was 80.
80. Thank you. There you see, it's been too long since I've been coming to college. But they went from having that mindset where they felt like they should win the national championship or compete for the national championship every year to actually doing it. And that's tough. That's a tough situation to be in the midst of that fan base because we all know, and everyone will tell you, there is no worse fan base than Ohio State and Alabama, the two worst fan bases in the country. And it's going to be hard, and it'll be interesting to see what happens to the Clemson fan base, especially, and even the South Carolina fan base, because now the team, an hour and a half up the road, 2 hours up the road, yeah, I know South Carolina won 5 straight, and Clemson's on a 5 straight run themselves. Okay, that's great. So they're 5-5 the last 10 years. But South Carolina ain't competing for national championships anytime soon.
Brett, Will Muschamp is in one of the toughest predicaments you could be in because he follows a guy who totally redefined the standard of great success.
Yeah.
11 wins, 3 years in a row. They had never come close to doing that. But on the other hand, he fell asleep in recruiting and left his roster a wreck. Okay, so he has to deal with those sort of dueling sort of monsters. And then he has to deal not only with the monster in his state, but the one in his division, mm-hmm. Georgia.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, both of those schools you're having to recruit against too,
yep.
And are just killing it in recruiting. And so you could... Like, let's say Muschamp averaged 8 or 9 wins a year for the next 4 years. You know, that's probably a tall order, but still, let's say he does it. You would have a lot if they're still getting their brains beat in by Clemson and Georgia, you're still going to have a significant number of Gamecock fans who are, like, not happy.
Oh, absolutely.
Because of that.
You know, and I know Clemson fans don't want to hear this, you know, and it was Mark Twain, I believe, who said, truth is like poetry, and nobody likes poetry. But it's true, and it's not an excuse, but it is true. I mean, what Clemson had to do this year was beat a bunch of paper bags. I mean, that's sure. What they had to do. It was no different than what Florida State had to do in the 90s. I mean, the ACC this year, and it's not every year. I'm not saying every year, but this year's particularly, it was just god-awful. And so then you look at South Carolina, okay, yeah, they had to play Georgia, and they had to play Texas A&M, and yes, they had to play Florida, which is a top-10 team.
Allegedly.
I agree with you on that, allegedly. They're not a top-10 team, but that tells you how bad college football is this year as a whole. But, you know, so it's not just, then they had to play Clemson. I mean, it's not just... They don't have to play. They don't get to play the Wake Forest, and they didn't get to play, you know, Boston College, and you know, and stuff like that. So, Larry, I mean, if South Carolina can, South Carolina's goal should be exactly what Arkansas was all through the early 2000s. You know, okay, great. Win 8 games, you know, a year. Every once in a while, throw in a 10th spot, and maybe maybe on a down year from Georgia, or you can sneak and get a win against Georgia in Columbia, maybe once every 10 years go to the ACC or the SEC championship like they did against Cam Newton and Auburn. I mean, that should be their goal. But you look at South Carolina, and maybe I'm wrong. I mean, you're a lot closer to it than I am. But I just remember thinking to myself, if you can't recruit and win at Florida, how in God's name are you going to win and recruit at South Carolina?
Business owners out there, if you own a business that accepts credit cards, you need to listen up. Tandem Payment, based right here in the upstate, run by Clemson folks, is changing the face of payment processing, quickly becoming the most cost-effective solution for all small businesses. Tandem's program saves you up to 90% on processing charges and gives your customers what they love most, choices. This is not some crazy introductory offer. Tandem's technology allows business owners to offset their credit card processing costs by applying a small customer service charge to each sale they make. If you want to know more, visit TandemPayment.com today. Former Tiger Hot Rod McDowell works over there at Tandem Payment. They handle all their business and customer service face-to-face. So give them a call, 864-672-1570. If you're tired of spending an arm and a leg on all those credit card processing fees.
Yeah, and back to Clemson. You know, this is a good year for them to have kind of a cake schedule, as opposed to, like, let's say this is back in 2015 when they hadn't yet established themselves nationally and there were still doubts about them. Then they would have been hammered for that all year. Whereas this year, I mean, this program has money in the bank, right? Largely because of that defense and defensive line, everybody knows all the studs they have. And so, you know, there's no doubt that they belong in the playoff. And the only question about Clemson is, you know, can they hang with Alabama? And I think even Clemson fans have that question. That's a legit question, particularly after watching Jake Bentley carve up the back end of that defense. It's very interesting how things have changed, like the tenor of the rivalry, because you go from the two teams top 10-ish when Spurrier was there battling each other on a yearly basis, and there was a lot of national intrigue.
Oh, yeah.
To now, I mean, I wrote before last week's game, I cannot recall a previous time when there was this little suspense and this little tension. Even Gamecock fans, it seemed, knew that a beatdown was coming. It was almost a surprise. It was a surprise to see them giving them a game and only down 7 at half and all that.
And what, got set with the 10 twice without scoring touchdowns, isn't that right? Well, or without scoring any points, isn't that right?
They had first and goal from the 2 and the 4.
And didn't score either
time,
right?
And had four tries apiece and didn't get in. So.
Well, you know, and it seems like only yesterday, but it also seems like a million years ago when I was living down there and, you know, going to Clemson every day and talking to Dabo Swinney when he was the wide receivers coach and remember that whole mess when he took over. I mean, I remember that night where I was calling Terry Don Phillips. I believe it was at the Waldorf Astoria. I called Terry Don Phillips at the Waldorf Astoria because he was up in Clemson for the Heisman.
New York.
He was up in New York. For, yeah.
Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's
College
what it was.
Football Hall of Fame.
That's what it was. College Football. Yeah. And I remember calling him in his room at the Waldorf Astoria trying to figure out what was going on with Bowden and what was going on with Dabo Swinney. Like, I just remember that whole situation, and it seems like a lifetime ago, and here they are now, well, you know, 5 years in a row, whatever it is, that they're competing for the national championship. And, you know, I mean, we're a long way removed from Rob Spence, I'll tell you that.
I think you were talking about 07 when Arkansas's university plane was on the runway in Oconee County.
That's right.
And Bowden was flirting with them.
Yeah.
And Terry Don and Billy DeAndre were in New York at Jeff Davis's Hall of Fame, College Football Hall of Fame induction. And that's where they heard the news that Tommy was about to leave. And actually, as Dabo tells it, Tommy called him off the road. He was in Myrtle Beach recruiting or whatever. Or North South game or something, and Tommy calls him. He says, "Hey, y'all need to come in. Looking like we might be going to Arkansas." And so you think of all those little pivotal moments that kept Dabo in Clemson. The other was when Rich Rodriguez had taken the Alabama job and had told Alabama, okay, I'm in unless this gets out before I tell my team at West Virginia.
That's right.
Well, it got out.
Yeah.
And then he backed out. Well, Dabo was going to go with him to be his offensive coordinator.
Oh, wow. Alabama. I didn't even know that. Crazy. I remember the Rich Rodriguez thing. Well, you know the thing about Dabo, and I've always said this, like I have always had a ton of respect for Steve Spurrier, and I always had a ton of respect for Dabo. And because two entirely different people, and because no matter what you ask them, they would tell you the truth. Or they would just say, I can't tell you.
Yeah.
Like, they won't lie to you. Like, you know, Steve Spurrier is a butthole, but he's a butthole 24 hours a day. What you see is what you get. That's not an act of what you see, whether there's a TV camera or not. And same thing with Dabo. And so I've always respected that. And, you know, I remember Dabo's first year. You know, Billy Napier, who's having a really good year now as offensive coordinator, but Billy Napier was co-offensive coordinator, and he comes up here. That's when he and Dabo were, I think, calling the plays together. And they come up here for the Meineke Car Care Bowl and lost to Skip Holtz in South Florida. And I remember sitting in I just moved to Charlotte. And I remember sitting in the press conference after the game, and I asked Dabo, and just to throw it out there but you don't expect anything in return. And I said, Do you expect any coaching changes during the offseason? And he said, oh, yeah.
You asked that question.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll never forget that. And I remember being, like, completely caught off guard. Like, oh, do you expect any coaching changes during the offseason? You guys are struggling. He goes, oh, yeah, I totally expect changes. And I went, well, okay. All right, thanks, Emma.
He had already had Chad Morris behind the scenes was leaving from Tulsa. Chad was in Hawaii at the bowl game with Tulsa. And he knew he was coming.
See,
that really sort of changed everything when he brought in.
Oh, it saved his career.
What's the maddest a coach has ever been at you?
Oh wow, Mark Riss got mad at me a couple times. Oh, easy. Lou Holtz. Lou Holtz got mad at me in 2003, and. I want to make sure I get his direct quote right. I'm violently
upset.
I'm violently.
That was toward you?
Yeah, yeah. He goes, I'm so violently upset I can't see. It was right after I had written Schlabaugh had written some stuff, and I'd written some other stuff and broke a lot of news on the whole Derek Watson illegal recruiting stuff. And I went down for the next press conference after that. And that's when he said, I'm so violently upset I can't see straight. And he looked right at me. Hey, how's it going? But you know the funny thing about that is? The first thing I had written, the first time I wrote a story on the whole Derek Watson NCAA stuff, Kerry Tharp called me and said, NCAA is not investigating us. He's the SID at South Carolina at the time. He now works for NASCAR, and I think he's head of PR for NASCAR. And he said, he called me up at the paper, and he said, because I was working for the Anderson paper, and he said, NCAA is not investigating us. That's just not true, because I wrote that NCAA was sniffing around and looking and talking to people. 2 weeks later, I wrote something else. He called me up immediately and said, that's absolutely 100% not true. And I said, Kerry, that's what you said 2 weeks ago about the NCAA.
Yeah.
And because in that time they had said, oh, the NCAA is investigating us, but we can't say what it's about or whatever. And he goes, yeah, well, that was different then. I was like, Kerry, like, come on. And I remember that I went to Vanderbilt that week. I went to Vanderbilt. South Carolina was at Vanderbilt for a Thursday night game. And athletic director Mike McGee was in the press box. And he saw me, and he summoned me over. And he just lit into me. Like, he dropped F-bombs left and right. And I've never been one to, like, back down from one. And, like, I remember, if you remember, me and Gary Williams got into it once at the ACC basketball.
I don't remember that.
Up in D.C. But, yeah, me and Gary Williams, it was right when Clemson had beaten me.
All right, well, hold on. Yeah. Mike McGee.
So, yeah. we started going back and forth, and you know, I dropped some bombs at him going back and forth, and basically said, I can't understand what you're saying. Oh, I said, you need to remove your lips from Lou Holtz's ass so I can understand what you're
kidding
saying.
Me.
Oh, no, we were like, he was cussing me, you little so-and-so, dropping bombs, and I said, I can't understand you till you remove your lips from Lou Holtz's ass. I don't know. And this was in the middle of the Vanderbilt press box on a Thursday night.
How did the conversation end?
It was just like, and it, like he just said something. Like he, I remember he muttered something under his breath, and he walked away, and I walked away. I was like, whatever.
All right, care. Gary Williams, DC, ACC tournament,
2005. You and I were up there, and in our hotel room where we were staying, or in our hotel, I should say, at the Renaissance, on the bottom floor, and I just found out purely by accident because I got off on the wrong floor on the elevator. I walked down, and there was this massive party already planned. It was a pep rally that night scheduled for Thursday night because the winner was playing North Carolina at noon the next morning on Friday. And Clemson won.
Yeah.
And Clemson had gotten wind of the scheduled pep rally.
Yeah.
And so I remember asking Gary Williams if the pep rally had any, and this is in the middle of all these media people, and it was in D.C., and I said, do you think that had anything to do with it? And he goes, this isn't high school. This isn't the senior prom. No, he goes, this isn't high school. He goes, why don't you tell them we're going to go to the senior prom tomorrow night, too. And I said, well, should I tell them that? He goes, tell them whatever you want to tell them. And if you write that, you're a horrible reporter, da-da-da. And then the next thing I know, the next morning, the Washington Post, that was the main story, canceled pep rally for Maryland against Clemson. Like, dude, like, my whole theory has always been, you're a coach in something that does not involve life or death.
Yeah.
You're getting paid millions upon millions of dollars a year. You can answer a question.
I'm sorry. And you call, when it's convenient to you, you call yourself an educator of young men.
That's right.
And then you lose your mind like a baby.
That's right.
When confronted with something that maybe you don't like.
But, no, you're 100% right.
All right, we gotta talk about the Vic Koning Escalade incident.
I gotta remember this one.
Okay.
Refresh my memory.
This was like 4 days before the Alabama-Clemson game in 2008.
Okay.
Clemson's top 10. It's the opener in Atlanta, and Vic Koning is the defensive coordinator at the time.
Right.
He's standing down in the jersey, outside the jersey locker room with us, with like eight to ten reporters.
Okay.
And he says, I think you were around then.
Oh, wait, I was already in Athens.
Okay. Anyway, so he says... he goes, yeah. Somebody asked him about a very generic question about recruiting against Alabama, or like, what kind of showcase is this Chick-fil-A kickoff game for your recruiting, for Clemson's recruiting? And he goes, yeah, well, I was down in, I'm just going to make up a town because I don't know where Julio Jones is from. I was in Bessemer. A Julio Jones football game, and I saw a nice Escalade, him getting out of a nice Escalade. And then I was over at, I forgot what other player it was. I'm going to say Mark Ingram, but I don't think it was Mark Ingram. Then I was over at Mark Ingram's. I saw him getting out of an Escalade. I don't know what's going on. And we're all just standing there going, you got to be kidding me.
I love that.
And so this is pre-Twitter, right? Big difference.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, if you say that, nowadays, it's up in 10 seconds. Well, so I had a blog at the time. I was still at the Post and Courier. This was, I think I was like 2 or 3 months away.
Well, if you were at the Post and Courier, okay. No. Yeah,
I was like 2 or 3 months away from leaving for Tiger Illustrated.
Yep.
Well, I had a blog that was, you know, fairly popular at the time. And so I go straight home and I post what he said. And I have a text from him. I think when I was in the midst of posting the blog, after I post the blog, I see I had missed a text from him. Maybe he had sent it to me when I was on my way home and I just didn't see it. And he goes, you know, I was joking, right? And so he had contacted the other reporters too, asking them not to write it. And the other reporters did not. Well, I did.
Oh.
And he was hot. And now, had he called me and he said, Larry, I need a favor. Please don't write that. I screwed up. You know, I didn't know that, you know, I just, Y'all got me going. I would have honored that. But it was just a... Anyway, the text that he had sent was just, you know, I was joking. That, you know, I'm sorry, man, but there are 8 other reporters around.
Right.
Like, yeah, that's fair game. Not gonna,
right. Well, you know what's funny? Here's my Vic Koenig story. The very first time I ever met Vic Koenig was at the Greenville Touchdown Club at the Embassy Suites, and I'm the only one, the only media person to show up, and I was stunned. Like, a couple TV people showed up, but they left after 5 seconds after getting their TV stuff, their audio. And during his thing to the whole Greenville Touchdown Club, he made a couple of jokes, and you're going to have to refresh my memory because you...
C.J. Gaddis.
Is he the one who got shot at the Waffle House?
Corey Groover.
Corey Groover. So he makes a Corey Groover joke. He said, yeah, you know, we got a lot of things we got to do on that defensive front. He said, you know, Corey Groover, you know, he was shot by the shot at the Waffle House, shot in the leg. He said, you know, after watching that film, that was the only, that bullet was the only thing he hit all year. And I went, oh, okay, so I'm writing this down. And then he made, who was the other? It was somebody else on defense. And he said, yeah, he couldn't play dead in a cowboy and Indian movie.
C.J. Gaddis. C.J. Gaddis.
So I go up to him, and I introduce myself to him, and he has this almost look of panic that I'm there. And he had said that about Corey Groover. That bullet was the only thing he hit all year. Oh, my God. That was outstanding. Like, that was outstanding. And so he said, you know, he begged me not to write it. And I said, look, I said, I don't know you. That's fine. I said, I'll make a deal with you. I said, every time I need something answered, you can answer. I said, I'll shoot you a text. I said, it could be 100% off the record. I said, but... do me a favor, and I'll do you a favor. And Vic and I got along great after that because I said, all right, I'm not going to write that. And but he was like my go-to. If I needed something confirmed, whatever, you know, hey, he was great.
And I remember you calling me. I think you were on your way home, and you told me what he said. And I said, you're not going to write that? And we argued about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, in hindsight, you were right. I mean, there are some things you have to,
but I was trying to parlay it. But I was trying to parlay it,
sure,
into
sure,
developing a source, sure, you know. And that was the whole thing with that. And you know Oliver Purnell, you know, you and I had some great sources and some great information from people on the basketball team during Oliver Purnell's era. How are things? You know, are things pretty good with the? How different? I want to ask you though, just because I don't know. How different is the Brad Brownell regime compared to the Oliver Purnell regime?
Oh, they're very easy going and easy to get. Brad is one of the nicest, most down to earth coaches I've ever covered. Purnell was more aloof.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, I have to share, when Clemson played at A&M in the second game of this football season, I stayed in Austin, and I went and interviewed Shaka Smart for the podcast.
Oh, nice!
Very, very good podcast, and you know, very good conversation.
Do you remember when we first met him?
I do, at the baseball.
At the baseball.
Yeah. We actually talked about that.
Yeah.
At the his introductory press conference, very informal, was at a baseball game. Anyway, so after like a 50-minute conversation, I said, which I ask a lot of my guests, I say, is there anything we haven't talked about that you want to talk about? Anything we haven't covered? And this is, he says, yeah, you know, Larry, I do want to say something. You know, you were really all over us for not signing this recruit back in 2000, whatever. And I just want to say that recruit never panned out, so we were right. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I think you have me confused with somebody else. He goes, no, I don't. I said, I didn't cover recruiting. He goes, yeah, but you said some stuff to us in passing, like, y'all really need to get that guy. And it turned out it was LaRon Dindy, who was a great player, but who went to some shady degree factory or something, some school.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they ended up not really suffering too much from not getting him. But that is the mind of a coach. They don't forget. They keep that stuff. I had totally forgotten about it. And I only remembered after, like, racking my brain. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe I did. I even did an archive search of the Post and Courier just to make sure I didn't write anything. And I didn't. I hadn't written a thing, but it was something I said in passing.
Wow.
Y'all don't want to lose that kid. He's good. And he remembered it. It's amazing.
It is amazing. My two favorite things about the Oliver Purnell era was Cheyenne Moore had a pit bull on campus named Trouble.
Dude, come
on. You can't make that up.
And then Purnell got mad. He would yell at Philip Sykes for not having stairs, makeshift stairs up to the podium after games. Like Oliver didn't want to, lift his leg up to climb up the foot or whatever. Oh, yeah. And he was like, "Come on, Phil." He would say that in more explicit
terms. In front of everybody. That was the thing. He did that in front of everybody. And the other thing about Oliver, that era, was the point or the shooting guard, the white kid. God, from Tennessee. What's his name?
Oglesby. Who's back at Clemson now, by the way.
Is he really?
On Brownell's staff.
Is he really? Mm-hmm. Wow. That's interesting.
What's the story?
Well, I just remember, we had a particular nickname for him in the meeting room.
I don't remember.
Oh, yeah. But it was just because he was Steph Curry before Steph Curry.
He was cocky.
The difference is Steph Curry made his shots.
Oglesby made some shots now.
But jacking it up from like 30 feet, I mean, come on, dude. Like, what are you doing?
What's cool about Oglesby, and regardless of whether you're a player or what profession you're in, he has grown up.
And he
looks back and says, yeah, I was a hothead. And he's very humble now, which always cool to see that. Everybody has their own.
Because I haven't seen him in 10 years.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in 10, 11 years. But I just remember, when we went to the NCAA tournament in Tampa and they played Villanova and they were up 22 points or 20 points with 18 minutes to go and lost to Villanova. And I just remember – And he had a horrible night, and I just
horrible. Chris Ard wanted me to ask you to say that word. Okay. Horrible,
and god awful, terrible. But yeah, it was bad. But I just remember him thinking. Remember him leaving, and he was going to go play in Europe, and it just didn't pan out. Well, it's nice to hear that he's come back and that he's grown up. I mean, God knows I wouldn't want to be judged for what I was doing when I was 18.
Me either. Speaking of Brownell, you actually, I guess back in 2010, we had Tiger Illustrated, we had all the scoops on that story, and you actually helped us because I wake up one morning and I get a tip that Terry Don and Billy D are flying to Charlotte to conduct their interviews of prospective basketball coaches, and it was too late for me to hop in the car, so the only thing I can think of, I'm like, okay, who lives in Charlotte that I can call? And obviously, you're the first person I think of. It's like, Brett, are you doing anything? No. I need you to drive. I need you to drive to the Charlotte airport and try to find the private airport terminal.
Mm-hmm.
And you do so.
Mm-hmm.
And you sit there. And you're like, all right, who am I looking for? And I want to say, you're like, all right, here comes a UConn driving through, or a van or something, and you saw them in the van?
I saw them walk out.
Okay.
And it was Billy D and Terry Don. And they walk out, and they get into this UConn, and they go to the NBC Suites.
I'm like, follow that car.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to say that.
Right? Follow that car.
So then I drive. So you're staked out outside the hotel,
mm-hmm.
just sort of seeing who walks in, and then I drive to Charlotte, and then I take over.
Because I was out there for like about 4 hours.
Yeah.
And I remember calling you going, all right, well, here's what this guy's a bald-headed black guy, da-da-da, because I didn't know their faces.
Al Skinner.
But I knew who Al Skinner was, but I was like, all right, there's a bald-headed black guy, I don't know who this guy is, and you're like, and you go, okay, well, is it this guy? And I remember, like, looking on our phones, trying to see if this was this guy or whatever. I was like, yeah, maybe. And then it's like, all right, here's a short little stubby white guy with blonde hair. And you'd be like, okay, is it this guy? Okay, that makes sense because that coach, I had heard rumors that he was going to coach and da-da-da. Like, I didn't understand that. I didn't know the face. You can't tell. I would not, and very few people would be able to go, oh, yeah, walking through the airport, Charlotte. Oh yeah, there goes the Tulsa basketball coach. Like nobody's gonna know what these guys look like. And I remember you and I sitting there doing that. And I remember when Brownell walked through. Yeah.
And then there was the Old Dominion coach who had that porn stash,
that's right.
And we were able to identify him through
that's right. Yeah, no, that was I assume you guys were the only ones that had all that information.
Oh, we had everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. I remember all that, and that's sitting outside the Embassy Suites off Billy Graham Parkway near the airport, sitting in the and directly across from where the entrance, the hallway entrance to their room was. And seriously, I was 25 feet just facing the room, watching, sitting in that car for like 4 hours. It was pretty cool. It was fun. It was kind of fun.
Great story. So, okay, Wilmington in the middle of a hurricane.
Yeah.
Are you like, did you like hole up in a hotel or something?
Yeah, I stayed at the, I tried to get to the hotel right downtown on the water, but it was already booked. And I was like, well, who's booking hotels on the water? And it wound up being residents from Wilmington who decided not to leave the city. They wanted to stay close to their home, but just not in their home. And most people assumed that hotels would have generators in case electricity went out. No.
Mm.
No. There's no generators. So it was, I stayed right beside UNC Wilmington at a Marriott Courtyard. And it was, there was only one time where I thought, I take that back. There were two times where I thought I might actually die. And I'm not joking when I say this. It was the days after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
So the following day, the hurricane comes ashore, and then the following day, I go out, and the hurricane comes out, I think reaches land at 5:05 Friday morning. And so that afternoon, me and an international reporter get in his big truck, and we go driving in all these places where we know water rescues are taking place. There's a group that started with Hurricane Katrina called the Cajun Navy. And it's civilians who have boats because Coast Guard can't get to everybody. I mean, there's just way too many people. And they go all over the country. They go all over the world rescuing people trapped by floods. And so I'd hooked up with some people of the Cajun Navy, got their frequency on what accounts they were using to message back and forth so I could figure out where they were at and where they were doing water rescues. Well, we go in this county that is near Jacksonville, North Carolina, which is where Camp Lejeune is. And, but it's just outside of that, it's just nothing but country. Think seriously, it's basically like Oconee County. And so we're going through, crossing over these little bridges where the water is just starting to get to the top of the bridge. And we go through and we're trying to get to these places. And, you know, and it was awesome. I got the only person that I know of to get an actual Coast Guard helicopter rescue on video.
Wow.
And just pure dumb luck.
Mm-hmm.
Pure dumb luck. In the middle, Larry, I mean, in the middle of nowhere. Like, even if all the cell towers were still standing up because most of them had been blown down, you would have very difficult time getting cell service. Like, you're in the middle of nowhere. And this helicopter comes in and does it. So it's like, oh, great. Let's keep going because we know there's a lot of rescues, tons and tons of flooding in Jacksonville. Let's get there. Well, we couldn't get there. All the roads that we were trying to get to had been washed out because of the raging waters and the floods had overtaken these bridges. So we started like, all right, well, let's backtrack and go the long way. It'll take us about 2 hours to get to, even though we're 20 minutes from Jacksonville, North Carolina, we have to backtrack. It'll probably take us about an hour and a half to get back. We couldn't go back the way we came because all those roads had washed out and all the bridges had washed out. And I'm like, I didn't think I was going to, you know, probably dying was a little, is a bad term there. I thought I was going to get stranded.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, I might be in this truck for 2 days, you know, because I don't know if I'm going to be able to get out of this. And we went over a bridge that we had no business going over. And 12 inches of water can move your car if it's fast flowing. 18 inches of standing water in your car can float away. And, you know, we went over probably 12 inches of flowing water. And, you know, the car never moved. It never hydroplaned or anything like that. And we got through and we were able to get out. But the worst part was coming home, trying to leave Wilmington Sunday morning. And I get to Whiteville, which is about an hour outside of Wilmington. And all the roads are closed. The State Highway Patrol's got all the roads closed on Highway 74, which is two lanes there and two lanes. It was a four-lane highway. It's like an interstate. And they're not letting anyone cross. And I'm pulling over, and I pull in the middle of the median, just trying to figure out what am I going to do. I've tried to go in the country roads, back roads, GPS, everything, and everything's washed out and flooded. You can't get over. And I just pure luck again. The median where I pull into, the center of the median, like a little turnaround, NBC Nightly News out of New York is there with their Suburban. CNN is there with their Suburban. Telemundo is there with their Suburban. And another TV agency is there out of New York. And they're all trying to get to Charlotte because they're all trying to get flights back to New York. And so I introduced myself to them. And one of them was like Martin Savage was there and a couple other guys. And they are hell-bent on getting to Charlotte. So I just start following them. And we rode through closed construction sites, like where they're trying to lay pavement and stuff like that, going through dirt and sand, and I'm following them, going over bridges that are like 6 inches underwater and 8 inches underwater. Well, we get to the main part in Whiteville where the cops have it closed. They have the westbound lanes closed. And they're like, screw it. They said the eastbound lanes, the bridge was just a little bit higher, so they thought, how about if we go the wrong way on the leftbound lane?
Wow.
And we went over, and I was so nervous, I rolled down the window just in case I had to get out of the truck and dive out in case the truck got washed away. And we got through, and it was really cool. I mean, wow. It was one of the greatest experiences I've had.
Brett, I got an ACC championship game to cover. I'm sure you got work to do, too. Thank you for visiting with us, man. Great times.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Larry.
All right. Sorry to cut him off there on some really cool anecdotes from covering the hurricane, but I had a problem. My SD card on my recorder literally was 2 seconds away from being full, so my bad on that. But thanks so much to Brett for sitting down with us on Saturday. Thanks to our title sponsor, Parham Smith and Arts and Hood Law Firm in downtown Greenville. They got Clemson Dubcast koozies that they're distributing. So maybe go by there and pick one up if you want to. Also, the Abernathy Boutique Hotel in Clemson. And last but certainly not least, Tandem Payment in Greenville. Thank y'all so much for listening. And we'll have, of course, the next podcast scheduled to drop Friday morning. Have a great week, everybody. Cheers.